Reichsminister of Armaments Albert Speer raced up the steps of the Air Ministry on the Tiergarten. He did not feel the harsh diagonal sheets of rain that plummeted down from the gray sky. He did not notice that his raincoat, unbuttoned, had fallen away, exposing his tunic and shirt to the inundation of the September storm. The pitch of his fury swept everything but the immediate crisis out of his mind. Insanity. Sheer, unmitigated, unforgivable insanity. The industrial reserves of all Germany were about exhausted, but he could handle that immense problem. Handle it by properly utilizing the manufacturing potential of the occupied countries. Reverse the unmanageable practices of importing the labor forces. Labor forces? Slaves. Productivity disastrous. Sabotage continues, unending. What did they expect? It was a time for sacrifice. Hitler could not continue to be all things to all people. He could not provide outsized Mercedeses and grand operas and populated restaurants. He had to provide, instead, tanks, munitions, ships, aircraft. These were the priorities. But the Führer could never erase the memory of the 1918 revolution. How totally inconsistent. The sole man whose will was shaping history, who was close to the preposterous dream of a thousand-year Reich, was petrified of a long-ago memory of unruly mobs, of unsatisfied masses. Speer wondered if future historians would record the fact, if they would comprehend just how weak Hitler really was when it came to his own countrymen, how he buckled in fear when consumer production fell below anticipated schedules. Insanity. But still, he, the Reichsminister of Armaments, could control this calamitous inconsistency as long as he was convinced it was just a question of time, a few months, perhaps 6 at the outside. For there was Peenemünde. The rockets. Everything reduced itself to Peenemünde. Peenemünde was irresistible. Peenemünde would cause the collapse of London and Washington. Both governments would see the futility of continuing the exercise of wholesale annihilation. Reasonable men could then sit down and create reasonable treaties, even if it meant the silencing of unreasonable men, silencing Hitler. Speer knew there were others who thought that way, too. The Führer was manifestly beginning to show unhealthy signs of pressure, fatigue. He now surrounded himself with mediocrity, an ill-disguised desire to remain in the comfortable company of his intellectual equals. But it went too far when the Reich itself was affected. A wine merchant, the foreign minister, a third-rate party propagandizer, the minister of Eastern Affairs, an erstwhile fighter pilot, the overseer of the entire economy. Even himself, even the quiet, shy architect, now the Minister of Armaments. All that would change with Peenemünde. Even himself. Thank God. But first there had to be Peenemünde. There could be no question of its operational success, for without Peenemünde, the war was lost. And now they were telling him there was a question, a flaw that might well be the precursor of Germany's defeat. A vacuous-looking corporal opened the door of the cabinet room. Speer walked in and saw that the long conference table was about two-thirds filled, the chairs in cliquish separation, as if the groups were suspect of one another, as indeed they were in these times of progressively sharpened rivalries within the Reich. He walked to the head of the table where, to his right, sat the only man in the room he could trust, Franz Altmüller. Altmüller was a 42-year-old cynic, tall, blonde, aristocratic, the vision of the Third Reich Aryan who did not for a minute subscribe to the racial nonsense proclaimed by the Third Reich. He did, however, subscribe to the theory of acquiring whatever benefits came his way by pretending to agree with anyone who might do him some good. In public. In private. Among his very close associates, he told the truth, when that truth might also benefit him.